There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast
on the left.
That's when the cannibalism started.
Do you want to start?
Are you practicing death?
No, I practice death when I sleep.
Oh, man. It's good. I do that when I stop breathing every night.
See, well, you
I
do
work
that
really hard on it.
Medically.
So many years I've been working on it. I get my neck fatter and fatter and fatter, and it presses on my larynx when I sleep. And so sometimes I don't breathe, and I'm still here.
But you see?
Can't stop me.
Can't kill you,
can't
dude.
Can't kill me. Dude, can't kill me, dude.
Can't imagine. In my mind, Count Dante should have a martial arts solution to sleep apnea.
Because if any
martial artist groups of henchmen had sleep apnea, it's guys in Count Dante's crew.
I don't know how he died, but I think that sleep apnea is high in the running.
Oh, I think that if there was a man whose sleep apnea was his mortal enemy, it would be Count Dante.
Trust me, it's a fat man's death. He's not a fat man himself, but it is. It's an unhealthy man's death. Yeah.
He lived a fat man's life.
He did, while himself still being quite the martial arts expert. Welcome to Last Podcast on the Left, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Marcus Parks. I'm here with Henry Zebrowski.
That's me. I'm ready for karate noises.
Yeah, and sleep apnea's best friend. It's Ed Larson.
That's right. Count Dante went from martial arts to martial farts. That's right, because he got fat,
that's funny. Pretty good.
He got
stuff.
Fat. He is unhealthy.
Also, he did, which has only ever been seen before by Artie Lang, in which he got fatter on Coke than off of it.
Yeah. That does happen.
That's special.
It's the Coke bloat.
Yeah.
Coke bloat's a real bad problem. And you know what? A lot of really healthy people, real farty, because they're vegetarian.
Oh, yeah. All right, so everything I said sucks.
That's why I follow my women around. That's how you know where the healthy girls are in Los Angeles.
Oh, man.
Follow the vegan farts.
I can see that. If I did cocaine, I'm sure I would just be like, well, I want a sandwich.
Yeah.
Give me a sandwich right now. I want a fucking sandwich.
Just power my sandwich.
Yeah, some people do it to keep drinking. I do it to keep eating cheesesteaks.
Yeah, and to keep talking about eating.
Yeah.
You got to eat when you're talking about eating.
My restaurant owner at the poorhouse, he loved cocaine.
Oh, you're a bar owner in New York City loved cocaine.
You know, there was a brief time there where he wasn't doing it, and then all of a sudden I knew he'd gotten back on it because I got a call at 4 a.m. telling me the soup sucked.
So when we last left Count Dante, the martial arts master of Chicago had just begun taking out full-page ads in comic books in order to hawk merch for his Black Dragon Fighting Society. And all this, of course, was using a mail-order business that was run by local nuns under Dante's control.
Doesn't get better than this.
Besides the t-shirts, sweatsuits, and nunchucks, all branded with Black Dragon Fighting Society logos, Count Dante also sold three separate mail-order pamphlets called World's Deadliest Fighting Secrets, which could be obtained by any angry comic book nerd for a mere 25 cents each. Count Dante had also fully given in to his status as a local character in Chicago by modeling his image and personality after the Satanist Anton LaVey, who was just starting to make headlines out in San Francisco as the head of the Church of Satan in the late 1960s.
I feel like every once in a while I just have to remind myself I don't like this guy.
I feel like last week you were like really trying hard to be like, you know, he's an asshole, but it's so hard, man.
Yeah.
Because Count Dante is one of my favorite Americans that have ever been born. except for the fact that I don't like his behavior towards women.
No, of course not. No, he's an absolute asshole.
He's a fucking bully.
He's inherently violent. He is a bully, but he's a fucking character. He is an American character. But all this added up to Count Dante basically billing himself as a sort of anti-hero. He was a real-life comic book character who could supposedly kill a man with a single touch using his vast repository of martial arts knowledge. And for just 25 cents, he could teach you how to do the same.
All it takes is 5 nickels, and you also get the secrets of Bong Zang.
But since every good comic book hero needs a love interest at some point, Count Dante created one for himself in the form of the so-called Dragon Lady of Chicago.
I spent so long married to my art form of fighting that now I cannot believe I am letting love into my heart. The most dangerous playing field of all.
Dragon Lady's vaginas are watertight.
Five finger death touch on the clit. On the Dragon Lady. Make an orgasm.
Birth name Carrie Anders. The Dragon Lady was just some local lady that Count Dante had gone to high school with.
Cool.
Allegedly, Anders had a big crush on Count Dante back when the Count was plain old John Keehan. But even though Dante had stood up Carrie Anders after promising to take her to the prom.
Yeah. That guy was too busy. I had to go work at the gas station.
Dante and Carrie reunited in 1967, just 5 years after they graduated. Carrie had apparently blossomed in the years since.
She grew bigger breasts.
She was
That means.
Yes. That's what blossomed generally means.
Was being nice about it.
Yeah, I was being very nice and not just.
I saw you had the body of a little girl, but obviously now you're a grown woman.
Well, she's now in her early 20s working at Chicago's Playboy Club, serving drinks and cigarettes, dressed in the bunny ears and swimsuit uniform of Playboy Club employees. Now, once she and Dante reconnected, he sent her a dozen red roses with a note reading, quote,
"The burning embers of love can be rekindled."
As if that wasn't cheesy enough, he actually signed the note Count Dante, even though Carrie Anders knew him better by his real name, John Keehan.
I got you roses the color of blood. The blood that I shed in order to prove to you that I am a wonderful lover and an accepting husband.
This is kind of like the plot of Gross Point Blank.
A little bit, yeah. But while you'd think all this would send Carrie Anders running, she quickly became swept up in the wild world of Count Dante.
How can you not?
Before long, she'd quit her job at the Playboy Club to work for Dante at his dojo, the Imperial Academy of Fighting Arts, all while she took private karate lessons from Dante himself.
God, she must have hated money.
Continue to do what you did before. Yes, make me a Jim Gimlet. Now try to kick me in the balls.
Now you're quitting to work at a dojo. That's what you doing. This nice job with all these tips. You're quitting the work at a karate dojo.
Joe, you don't have control of me anymore. I'm going with the Count. He's royalty from Europe. He's making me a dragon. What did you do, Joe? What did you do? The only dragon I did was your ass in order to make money for you at the club. I don't want to be a rabbit no more. I want to be a dragon.
Reportedly, Count Dante was surprised and impressed by the toughness displayed by Carrie Anders, so he nicknamed her the Dragon Lady and branded her as basically a Playboy bunny with a black belt, even though her karate skills were relatively limited. Once dubbed the Dragon Lady, Carrie accompanied Count Dante everywhere day and night, and as a couple, the two of them began appearing on tabloid covers and local TV shows as a sort of combination martial arts magic show act.
You ready to see the magic show? Let's watch this dime bag disappear into my face.
And so, with the Dragon Lady by his side, Count Dante began giving in to the theatrical side of martial arts more and more, all with the assistance of an increasingly large number of hangers-on who believed wholeheartedly in the so-called Dante system of martial arts. Remember, the Dante system is just beating someone as badly as you can, as quickly as you can.
And don't forget, going for the eyeballs and the throat.
Yeah, the eyeballs, throat, and he's introducing the testicles slowly but surely.
One at a time.
Left, right.
The 70s are like the decade of the testicle for Count Dante. 1967, he's just building up to it.
I would say he did grow into it.
He did. Well, in the summer of 1967, Count Dante organized a karate tournament in a Chicago auditorium called the Medina Temple. But the hook for this event was supposed to be a fight between one of Count Dante's students and an actual bull. This was a copy of an act put on by a Japanese karate master named Sosai Oyama, who'd been fighting bulls since the 1950s to push the limits of his skills. Oyama would tour the world fighting bulls while wearing only sparring shorts, but Oyama was talented enough to grab the bull by the horns and grapple it to the ground again and again.
That's kind of fun.
It's really cool.
Like, wow.
It sucks for the bull, but it's no different from rodeo.
Well, if you're just wrestling, it's better than stabbing with a bunch of little swords.
Yeah, well, that's bullfighting.
That's bullfighting.
That's Spanish bullfighting.
Yeah. That's even.
Yeah.
Man grappling a bull, that's even.
Yeah, that is even.
Also, Chicago just became Bull Town.
It did.
They formed in the 60s.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, about fucking Scottie Pippen.
Yeah.
Count Dante's student, however, was not on Sosai Oyama's level. Dante's guy was a nerdy Jewish kid named Arthur Rapkin, who'd gotten into karate because he'd grown up as a fat kid who'd been bullied in gym class. But that made Rapkin the perfect student for Count Dante.
Every single time you're wondering, can I conquer this bull? Think about how wobbly your little girl tits are, all right? And how bibbly bobbly your flapping gut is, all right? Now you take that rage. Now everyone used to point it out, right, and tell you how what a girlish looking man you were. How you were a little baby boy that should be beaten to death. Like, you want to focus that rage at the bull.
Yeah, that's what Count Dante was great at. He was great at finding really angry kids who had been bullied and were willing to do anything Count Dante asked him to do, no matter how fucking stupid it was.
So Rapkin's basically Jonah Hill and Wolf.
Yeah, basically. Well, Arthur Rapkin had been simultaneously expelled from high school and his karate class in one single day in 1964.
That's the coolest thing I've ever heard, Arthur.
He'd gotten into an actual street fight with a teacher from his high school who was also a fellow student at Rapkin's karate studio. He'd basically, after class one day, he just punched his teacher in the head.
Wow. Yeah. They didn't even do a full, bow for attention. They didn't do a full fight.
Not if you want to win.
Yeah.
That's the Dante system. Kill him in his sleep.
Punch, then bow.
Yeah. Like
cut their brake lines. That's the Dante system.
Well, like Count Dante, Rapkin had no time for no contact karate. And after he was expelled from his first dojo for beating up his high school teacher, he had found his way to the Count, where he quickly became one of Dante's top students. Within a couple of years, Rapkin had actually moved to nearby Wisconsin to open his own dojo, using what else but the Dante system.
I will chain you from a curd into a full wheel.
Now, Count Dante got the idea to do the bull show in his next tournament from Sosai Oyama. And since Arthur Rapkin liked sparring with larger opponents, Count Dante probably figured that those skills automatically transferred to literally fighting a bull.
Yeah, you like fighting Fat Jerry? Well, I've got the fattest Jerry of all. We flew him in from España.
Because, bullfighting is technically usually done with swords.
Yes, no. Exactly. Yes, our swords are our intellect, and our flags are our hands, and our knees are our knees still, and our feet or our cars.
And there wasn't going to be any practice at all.
How can you practice?
He was just going to, on the day of the tournament, just put Rapkin in the fucking ring with a bull and, let's see if he can take it down. I think he can.
It's like, you practice by fighting a tree?
Harness your chi. No, what I do is I take my bobcat out. I rent a bobcat from the local construction office and I have my
bobcat.
Yes. No, not Bobcat Goldthwait. He'd die instantly. I have bobcats. They come out there and they just... They punch the sled part.
Well, going all in immediately, as he always did, Dante bought a 2,000-pound Brahmin bull and drove it around Chicago on a flatbed truck with Arthur Rapkin displayed next to the bull.
Dare me to punch this bull? Excuse me, ma'am. You dare me to punch this bull?
So was it like a cutout of him, or was he really just like had his arm around the bull and he's like, I'm going to kick its ass?
He had his arm around the bull. He's posing. He's showing his muscles, and Dante has a megaphone. He's driving with a megaphone out of his mouth, and he's saying shit like this.
Come to the Medina Temple. and see this brave young karate expert take on this ferocious bull.
Like, even he made Rapkin close down his Wisconsin dojo. He's like, you're coming here and you're training to fight this bull until it happens.
You got it. Absolutely, Countdown Dave. You know I got it locked down. My mother said I was the strongest of the five, son. Oh, you know he ain't coming for him. I'm turning him into jerky. 2 seconds later, I will get him.
Fortunately for Rapkin, the police arrived on the day of the tournament and shut down the show before Rapkin could be killed in the ring by a wild animal.
Thank fucking God. Thank God. I didn't know. I was so, wow. I was really, oh boy, I did not think it was going to go well. I was going to hit it, and I was going to see how it was going to go.
If I remember correctly, though, I might be wrong on this, but when I was a kid, like, Brahmin bulls, they always had them at stock shows, mm-hmm. and you could take pictures with them. They're the ones with the big, like, yeah, the big hump on the back. I think Brahmin bulls are the gentlest of all bulls.
They would have to be.
Yeah, if you're gonna get one, I think Brahmin's the one to get.
Well, just the fact that he could actually drive it around in his pickup truck around the streets of Chicago
on a flatbed
might tell you that it's not the most aggressive bull.
Yeah. And they don't have horns, it looks like, from the quick Google image search.
Let's just say Arthur very easily could have been murdered by that bull. It does not matter, because the second he punches it in the head, the second he goes up to the stationary bull, because imagine how that fight goes. The Brahmin's just standing there, and Arthur's like, let me at him. The second he fucking hits one fucking strike on the chops.
Yeah, he's not Mongo from Blazing Saddles. Yeah. It's not gonna fucking fall.
He's gonna go, and then the Brahmin bull's gonna beat the fucking, it's gonna stomp him.
It's gonna trample him.
They're 1,800 to 2,400 pounds.
Now, it is very much a possibility that Count Dante tipped off the cops himself so they could bust up the bullfighting show before it could even happen.
What happened?
The cops find out.
I can't believe this was supposed to be the best days of our lives. I guess we'll just have to go home safely then.
Good job, boys. Thank you. Here's your $20. Okay.
Now let's go shoot this bull in the head. We can have some hamburgers.
Well, even though Dante didn't promise on the event as delivered, Dante had a strict policy of no refunds.
Oh.
I'm locked in.
Likewise, it seems like Count Dante may have used his next tournament, held in September of 1968, as a massive smokescreen to make a little cash without having to pay his creditors. Because it seems like mommy and daddy's OBGYN money, I think that stopped flowing to Count Dante by the late 60s. Like, you're good.
Another crime against humanity, Count Dante was cut off by mommy and daddy.
You could say his money was on a menopause.
There we go. Good work.
Now, for this one, Count Dante used his attractive girlfriend, the Dragon Lady, in all the advertisements. And he had her be the spokesperson who spoke to the press.
Talk hot to him, honey.
In an interview with the Chicago Tribune, the Dragon Lady claimed that the organizers were going to march to Muhammad Ali's house to get him to join the fights. They were going to convince him.
And I should know, as soon as I talked to Mr. Clay, he would absolutely be interested in joining a fighting tournament. That's right, we're walking to Kentucky.
Ali, of course, did not show up.
Oh.
And neither did the crowds. The World Fighting Arts Championship Tournament of 1968 was a total bust, but Dante still managed to make a profit on the failure. Since any money he might make would go directly to his many creditors, Count Dante had his bullfighter, Arthur Rapkin, steal almost $9,000 in cash from the ticket booth at the gate. Arthur then called the police himself to report the theft. And since the cops believed Arthur's story, Dante got to keep all the cash.
You know, again, can't hold him down. He's figured out that much, man. He's just figuring out how to just eke his way through 1 week at a time.
Yeah, man, what a great fucking plan.
Yeah.
It's so stupid. It's more
I'm going to rob me.
It worked.
But we're seeing, like, already these, like, truly Byzantine cocaine-fueled plans.
Well, he's not on cocaine just yet.
It seems like he wants to be.
He's dibble-dabbling. Yeah, it's not quite getting there at
but
this point.
But these are all coke ideas.
Yes. No, he's one of those guys whose brain is made even... He already has a coke brain,
yes.
And then once he gets on coke, it's even worse.
Yeah, it's like one of those guys who are like, I'm really into B12 right now.
Yeah.
You should be using... Why are you taking it anally?
Well, from what it seems like, even though Dante got his money, the failure of the tournament was still a massive blow to his ego. Quite unfortunately, as is the wont of many inherently violent men, Dante took out his frustrations on his girlfriend,
That's
the dragon
sad.
Lady.
That's sad.
It's terrible. Reportedly, Dante beat Carrie Anders and gave her a black eye, blaming the failure of the tournament on her. And it wasn't the only time he laid hands on her. Carrie later said that Dante would make her shape his elaborate pointy beard, and she was so scared of making a mistake while doing it that her hands would shake.
No fear should enter into the art of beard arts.
No.
No.
No, no. Well, he used the hair-dissolving powder, so if there was a mistake, he might, you know, lose half of his pointy mustache.
And then... What in the living hell will I do? No, the money will go!
Who
the
am
money
I?
Will go!
If I don't have my pointy mustache, who am I? But even though Carrie broke up with Dante and moved in with her parents after the failure of the 68 tournament, Dante wouldn't let the relationship go. The Count would show up at Carrie's home just to make sure that she knew that he was still around. And he once even showed up demanding that she make him breakfast. And when she said no, and this is such an adult bully move.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to beat up your dad. If you don't make me breakfast, I'm going to beat up your dad.
I'm going to beat up your father. Chicago karate instructor idea. I'll just be like, you're going to make me some Rice Krispies? Well, I'm going to go up there. I'm going to beat up your father.
Dad, if I don't make pancakes, this guy's going to beat you up.
Make the pancakes.
Yeah, she did. Just to make him go. At that point, he's threatening her family. She made him the pancakes. He went away and left without further incident.
But he
did show up time and again.
I just got to say thank you so much. You know that several dollar pancakes are my favorite.
Seems like he was really dragging the relationship out.
There we go.
I'm angry.
Dragon.
That's angry. That is angry.
.com.
Live from your grave.
Now, since Count Dante's Deadliest Man Alive comic book ads are doing reasonably well as the 1960s turned into the 1970s, Chicago's leading martial arts master was increasingly living in the fantasy world that he'd spent so much of the previous decade constructing. This, of course, is what led to the infamous Dojo War of 1970.
Dojo War!
More of a battle.
Yeah.
I would say it's a joke. It is a dojo skirmish. No, I like it.
Skirmish is being kind.
That's what I feel like. It's edging on skirmish.
Scrimmage.
Yeah.
Yes. If someone didn't die, I'd call it a scrimmage. Yes.
Yeah. In the history of Japanese martial arts, there is a practice called dojo yabori.
Yes, it's most honorable.
Yeah, it's dojo storming. In a classic dojo storm, the top students of one martial arts school will visit a rival school and challenge its members in an attempt to test the school's fighting abilities.
You simply do not have the ability to confront my powerful kung fu.
It's pretty awesome. I didn't know there was an actual term for this.
No, yeah. This used to happen. It used to go and they used to go, but it used to be more of like, it was both.
It was like a samurai thing, mostly, yeah.
And they would do it both as ceremonial and as legit. So it would both be like an actual attack, but it would also just be like, we're going to randomly show up and see if my karate can beat your karate. And everyone just goes like, yeah, fuck yeah, of course. All we do is do karate.
Yeah,
fuck yeah. Let's fucking try our karate.
Yeah. Other times, a dojo storm will just be a fight between the two leaders of the rival dojos instead of an all-out brawl. Because usually it was just a big fucking brawl.
Yeah.
But if the challenger wins, the rival school loses credibility, and a few students might decide to switch allegiances to the challenging dojo. Now, there really isn't any one known catalyst for what set Count Dante on the path to declaring war.
There very rarely is, Marcus.
Very, very rarely. War, what is it good for?
GDPs, obviously. Stock market.
What we do know is that Dante picked up the phone in April of 1970 and called a rival martial arts studio called the Green Dragon Society at their dojo, which was unironically called Black Cobra Hall. Dante then issued a simple warning to the Green Dragons. He said, quote,
I'm coming over there, and I'm bringing a bunch of guys to bust up your joint.
Oh, because they're the green dragons, and there he has a joint.
Oh, whoa, yeah, it's fucking weird. But also, that's just fun as hell, because that guy was looking for a fight. The guy doing the Green Dragon Society was definitely pointing his way towards Count Dante.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let's go through some of the catalysts, some of the reasons behind this. What we do know is that in 1970, the Green Dragons were the biggest rivals to Count Dante's Black Dragons, and that rivalry was, for multiple reasons, finally coming to a head. Some say that the Green Dragons were running their mouths about Count Dante, saying that he's full of shit and he doesn't know how to hold his own in a real fight.
I can fight! Oh, I can fight!
I'm gonna name my dojo Python Kai.
Well, other people in the community said that Dante was pissed off because the Green Dragon Society's logo was too close to the logo Dante used for his own Black Dragon Fighting Society's logo.
Compare them. Look, what we have here is the Black Dragon. Absolutely frightening. The most powerful opponent you can be. Drenched in wickedness. And then, now it's green?
The Green Dragon.
That's not a dragon!
The only Green Dragon I know of came from J.R.R. Tolkien's masterpiece, The Fellowship of the Ring, and that was populated by hobbits.
I love smoke.
Beat up that nerd!
Good work casing the nerd.
But an anonymous source who spoke to Black Belt Magazine about the dojo war, he suggested a third option. That source said that Dante did not like having perceived imitators when it came to the Dante system, and apparently the Green Dragons were copying Dante's incredibly reckless teaching style.
They were fighting in a fat man style without the fat man body.
Well, like Dante's Black Dragons, the Green Dragons also used weapons in their training. Remember, Dante would use knives and guns. Mm-hmm. They also did balls out full contact training at all times, just like the Black Dragons, and the Green Dragons also used a technique that put them into an animal-like state during combat, like Dante Tiger Mirror Method.
Hey, listen. My name is Dr. Michelangelo. I've got nothing to do with your so-called Dante system. We here at Green Dragon Fighting Society do things just a little bit different. It's family style.
I still wish we were Red Dragons.
There's still time to vote.
But in the end, it could have also been that Dante was trying to extort the Green Dragon Society for a good old-fashioned turf tax. And when the Greens refused to pay up, Dante decided to attack. And that actually might be the most likely thing.
It's like possible.
Calling up someone and say, like, I'm going to bring a bunch of guys over there to bust up your joint. That sounds like turf tax.
Yeah, It'd be a shame if something happened to your dojo.
Yeah.
I could offer your dojo a little protection.
Exactly.
Which is hilarious because the one thing that doesn't need protection, it was a dojo.
Yeah. Man, that's the whole point of having the dojo.
It's filled with karate experts. They protect the stuff.
But no matter the motivation, after Count Dante made the call to the Green Dragon's dojo, he called two of his most loyal students and invited them to travel to Black Cobra Hall in order to confront the Green Dragons on their own turf.
You must come in the dark of night. You must come with your weapons available and at the ready. And also, you must come with several liters of Pepsi, because I have a bit of a sweet tooth.
One of these two fighters was our first and last Polish fighter of the series, Jimmy Konchevic. Well, just Jim Konchevic. Konchevic was one of Count Dante's most loyal acolytes, which meant that he'd pretty much do anything Count Dante asked, regardless of how reckless or stupid said request was.
Can I count on you, Jim?
Sure.
God, that's what I like to see. We'll kill again tonight.
What do you need?
Oh, you'll see.
It's not money again, is it?
Yes. I actually could use some money as well. And then we'll fight.
Well, even though Konchevic was entirely unsure what Dante's plan was, or even what Dante's motivation was for storming Black Cobra Hall, he still called several students from his own school to join the fight when the count beckoned. And so at 10 p.m. on a Thursday, six Black Dragons, led by Count Dante, arrived at Black Cobra Hall on Fullerton Avenue.
Wow.
Wow. Are they all colorblind? Like, why are they going to tell us what color all the animals are?
Wow. Dante knocked on the large castle-like door that was the entrance to Black Cobra Hall.
Dun, dun, dun.
dun, dun, dun.
And to get his crew inside, Dante yelled,
"Police!"
while holding up a fake badge. Which is not very fucking karate of him, I might say.
Chicago PD!
The Green Dragons either fell for the ruse, or they were confident they could take down their rivals, because the six black dragons were equally matched by six green dragons. So, when the Green Dragons opened the door, the Count Dante and his crew rushed inside.
I think it would have been cool if you said karate police.
Yeah. Karate police. We're here to arrest all you lame asses for doing poser ass karate. We're here, we're the poser police. We're here to arrest all you non-talented posers. We're sending you down to loser school. You're going to go to loser school.
Now, when I said earlier that the Count Dante system was the Count's undoing, what I meant was that Dante had created an ultra-violent atmosphere where every guy was basically ready to fight to the death at any moment. In fact, for a lot of these guys, getting into potentially deadly bare-knuckle brawls, that was the entire point.
This must have been extremely exciting.
Super exciting. It's finally happening.
We're doing it now. The fight. This is like, you could feel it. Look what's going on. We're doing it. The actual, we finally get to kick and fight.
Well, they're in the movie. Because yeah. That's the thing. Is Count Dante's, he's a comic book guy. Like, he's in comic
he
books.
He is.
But he sees his life like a movie. He sees it like a narrative. And this is the big scene. And he's expecting things to go down like they go down in the comic book, or like they go down in the movies.
Yeah, like, he would fight the leader, like him and the leader. Leader would fight one-on-one, and then all the other boys would surround him, and it would be super organized, and guys are all gonna fight, and then one guy's just gonna get and he's gonna fall down, and one guy, you're gonna slightly stab at him, and the other guy's go and just like fall over.
No. When you get six guys who think they can fight against six other guys who think they can fight, and you put them together.
Think they can fight.
Yeah.
It's fucking chaos. Now, since the Green Dragons had more or less ripped off the Dante system, they were just as, if not more violent than Dante's Black Dragons, most likely wanted to prove that they could do Dante better than Dante could do Dante. So, when the Black Dragons rushed in, the Green Dragons grabbed the decorative, yet still deadly martial arts weapons that hung on the walls of Black Cobra Hall, with every intent to use them on Dante's boys.
Don't worry, they won't be able to do anything with that Pier 1 art.
Yeah, $20 sword is still a hunk of metal.
Yeah. Very much so. In the Green Dragons, they think they're in a fucking movie, too. You know, they're all in it. The Black Dragons.
Just coming, just jumping like this, you know? There's nothing more dangerous than a guy who doesn't know how to use a sword.
Don't.
With a sword.
Black Dragons, however, had also come armed. Some of them had nunchucks. And while I don't know for sure, I very much hope that they were the branded Black Dragon Fighting Society nunchucks that Dante sold in his comic book ads. Because I do have a scene in my head of the nuns, like, outfitting all of these guys for battle before they went out.
Nun, before I go. Pray for me. Do it in English. I can't stand it when you do it in Latin.
Please, God, give power to this great karate master.
Listen, Sister Francesca, I don't know how tonight's going to go. Let me just see him one time. You never showed him to anybody. I want to be the one time, the only guy saw him.
These are nunchucks made from actual nuns.
Locally sourced.
Don't you mean by actual nuns?
No, it's their boat. Smash their boat.
Now, amongst an array of bladed weapons, one green dragon was brandishing a mace.
Cool.
Another had a fucking katana.
This is the end of Anchorman.
Yeah. Yeah. Some accounts, however, say that Dante and another black dragon ambled to the back office to talk to the school's manager.
I'll try to end this with diplomacy.
And while Dante was out of the room, either a black dragon or a green dragon attacked the other side. Others, however, say that Dante was by himself in the manager's office, just milling around when the melee began.
Hold on, are you telling me there's conflicting stories here?
There is no single set story for how any of this went down.
It's I could just see him running to the manager's office being like, there's cash in there.
From what it seems like, everyone's adrenaline went to 20.
Yeah.
And they just kind of blacked out for a while.
Well, the plan was... get them.
Yeah, it really was. But no matter where Dante was when the fight started or which side threw the first punch, once the melee began, Jim Kinchevic went all in, by grabbing a green dragon and sweeping his legs before taking him to the ground with a judo throw. The fighting escalated quickly from there, and since none of these guys were super well-trained with their weapons, the green dragon idiot with the sword started swinging his weapon with reckless abandon. Jim Kinchevich was cut several times.
Yeah! Use the sharp sword!
Dozens of times, in fact.
I got the sword, guy.
Yeah. You boys take a break.
What the fuck?
Yeah. I told you to wrap your arms in newspapers.
Yeah, one green dragon quite possibly lost an eye to his own side's wild katana.
Hey, man, it's war.
Yeah, it is war. The fog of war, as they say.
Don't worry, we'll get you a glass one later. Chicks love it.
Now, after the fight continued for some time, the black dragons decided that they had failed to fight their way back to the manager's office, which is, I suppose that's how you win. You make it to the manager's office.
Base.
Yeah, base.
If I sit in the manager's chair, I run the dojo now. That is just rules. That is karate rules. Ancient Chinese rules.
It's basically capture the flag.
And the guy's like, it's my building. I own the deed to the building. I'll just call the fucking police.
Kinchevich, covered in blood and katana wounds, called for a retreat. Specifically, he screamed, quote,
let's get the fuck out of here.
Well, that's an amazing, yeah, absolutely great idea.
And so Count Dante and the rest of the Black Dragons followed Kinchevich's lead.
We'll go in a field of smoke.
One of the Black Dragons had actually like locked the door behind them, so they had to force their way out of the Black Dragon's entrance. Like a bunch of guys like, get me out of here.
So we get the key.
Yeah. Once escaped, the Black Dragons noticed that Kinchevich had not made it outside. So one of the Count's guys poked his head back inside to see what happened, but he was horrified to see Kinchevich flailing towards the door as a geyser of blood spurted from his neck.
Truly the most Polish way to end a karate match.
Apparently, the guy that Kinchevich had judo thrown at the beginning of the brawl had not forgotten that slight. And as Kinchevich was leaving, that green dragon had taken a massive spear off the wall and thrown it just before our Polish karate kid had reached Black Cobra Hall's exit, striking Kinchevich in the neck.
The fuck? I didn't know there'd be fucking spears, man! What the living fuck?
Dude, that's the bitch
in handheld! No range! No range!
I just can't believe there's 12 karate guys in Chicago and only one of them's Polish.
I love this, dude. This is the bit when Brick and Anchorman 2 has the trident.
Yeah.
It's the same bit.
I think they may have stolen it from this incident. The massive neck wound, along with the 36 katana cuts Kinchevich had received in the battle, it caused Kinchevich to collapse and bleed to death on the sidewalk outside of Black Cobra Hall. And so, in the end, the only fatality from Count Dante's dojo war was Count Dante's own man.
Now, normally I would say never leave a man behind. But that man was a pussy.
And plus, he's too heavy to lift.
Yeah, he's quite long. My back actually really hurts from the war.
You know the guy, you ever like, when you were a kid, you know, like you do something and then the moment after you do it, you're just like, oh no.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, through yeah. The spear, fuck, just has to be like, oh god.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I really lost my head there for a second. Yeah. I threw a spear at a man. I was just trying to scare him. I actually never thought I'd ever throw a spear at a man. This is an amazing day for me.
No, that's what my dad used to call being cute. It was like when someone got hurt, it's like, oh, somebody's being cute, weren't they?
Yeah.
And like, yep. And that's this guy was being cute. Thought he's like, I'll just throw a spear, and then I guarantee you, as soon as it left his hand, he went, fuck. Ooh, oh shit, shit, shit. No.
They started it.
Now, after seeing Kinchevich collapse and die on the sidewalk, one of Count Dante's students ran to a fire station and called the cops. Cops showed up just in time to apprehend both the green and the black dragons. Black dragons were just about to flee the scene. And all 10 men were taken into custody that night, including Count Dante himself.
No, everybody hold. We must listen to the local constable.
You know, they're all just sitting there with their hands in their pockets looking at this guy bleed to death.
Fuck, man.
Jim.
Short war, huh? Yes, yes, very short. Very, very short, yeah. Anybody, it's kind of crazy how fast wars are over.
Does anybody know Jim's family? I think he's got a sister out in Pacoma.
Yeah, I think, yeah, his sister, but who... She's going to make a big deal about this on Facebook.
You know what the funny thing is? I don't have her number, so I'm not going to call her.
Yeah, I don't.
I think she reads the paper. This is going to make the papers.
Does she get karate newsletter monthly?
Do you think we have to send a telegram to Warsaw?
God, I hope not. That'll cost a lot of money.
However, the story that Konchevich's killer told to the cops was not a story of spear throwing. Instead, the Green Dragon maintained that Konchevich had basically engineered his own demise. He said that Konchevich had knocked him down, and Konchevich was in the process of launching himself to the ground to further beat his rival. But while on the floor, the Green Dragon grabbed an abandoned weapon and stuck it in the air just as Konchevich leapt. And just like the scene that's been in dozens of movies and TV shows, Konchevich supposedly impaled himself on the blade through the neck when he dove down.
That's the ending of the movie The Edge.
Yeah, it's also, it was a scene in Lost as well. Yeah, it happens. It's
Braveheart.
It's cliche. Yeah. It's a big cliche.
It didn't happen. He just nicked his neck by throwing a spear at him.
You just see him on the ground with a giant spear sticking out of his neck. He's like, I think he did it to himself.
Honestly, I think we need to look at the systemic factors that led to a moment like this.
And whether this is how Konchevich actually died or not is up for debate. But either way, the man who killed Konchevich was still just charged with involuntary manslaughter. He got off light.
He's like, well, he got him with the spear. We got to give him credit for that.
Yeah. Even in karate, there's white privilege.
As far as Dante went, he was reportedly devastated by the loss of his friend and student, but he still used the dojo war as a promotional opportunity.
He was like my right hand. But I'll regrow my right hand.
He reportedly claimed in interviews that when it came to the injuries that he himself had inflicted upon the Green Dragons, he was responsible for, quote,
removing both eyes from the face
of one of his rivals.
Yeah, I just got both eyes out there.
From the face.
From the face. The face of the guy. Yeah. I go in there, you know me, always popping eyes out of the face.
As opposed to where? As opposed to what other part of the body would you remove the eyes from?
Well, if you have eyes in your hand, then I'm taking them from your hand.
Are you saying that nipples aren't eyes? Because
yeah,
I'm looking at them.
Because if nipples are eyes, my eyes are very sensitive. Wildly sensitive. And I will orgasm to the touch of my eyes.
Now, this sort of boast was pretty much a part of Count Dante's regular patter by this point in his career. As the deadliest man alive, Count Dante bragged that he had killed 50 men, which meant that if he was telling the truth, which he wasn't, he'd killed at least 25 men since his time in the military, all in death matches across the world. But concerning eye removal, Count Dante also claimed that he had maimed at least 25 more men by ripping off their testicles or plucking out their eyes, which was supposed to be Count Dante's trademark move, even if nobody had ever actually seen him do it.
Well, you can't physically see it. It's too fast to be seen.
I took your eye. You can't tell when I did it.
How do you know? You're blind right now. You're blind. You're just in a fantasy thinking you can see. That's how blind you are.
Now, in reference to the eye removal, Count Dante was talking about a Green Dragon named Jose Gonzalez. According to a Chicago Tribune article, because the Chicago Tribune loved Count Dante.
They were like, "Thank Count Dante, thank you, you fixed page six again."
Oh, yeah, you can always get a couple inches on Count Dante. Well, according to them, Gonzalez was sent to the hospital after the attack, where doctors unsuccessfully tried saving a badly injured eye. Some say that he was, as I said earlier, cut by a katana wielded by a fellow Green Dragon. But most likely, Gonzalez had been partially blinded when a black dragon hit him in the eye with a nunchuck. So in the end, while the Green Dragons did kill a black dragon, the black dragons at the very least took an eye, even if it was by accident.
Most honorably.
I can just imagine the thwack, like,
ow, ow, fuck, ow, what the fuck, fuck, what the fuck?
Fuck? Aye, not the face.
Nunchucks are the fucking, you hit the body with the nunchucks.
Honestly, he's right. No more face stuff. No more face stuff.
What about neck stuff?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, Count Dante actually came very close to going to prison for his friend's death.
Hey, so close, it's almost like it didn't happen, because it didn't.
According to the accountability statutes in Illinois, Dante could have been held responsible for Konchevich's death because Dante had initiated the brawl and invited Konchevich to come, which created the circumstances that led to Konchevich's demise.
Agreed.
So Dante lawyered up, but again, in the dumbest way possible. For some reason, Dante chose a Chicago police officer who'd recently graduated from Knight Law School, but had not yet passed the bar. This character's name was Bob Cooley.
I like a lawyer outside the system.
Yeah. According to Bob Cooley, he was still on the job as a cop at the precinct house when Count Dante showed up asking for his help. Supposedly, Cooley arrived back at the station one day after a shift to find Dante waiting for him, wearing a yellow fishnet leotard and a purple cape. According to Cooley, Dante said, quote,
"Hello.
Greetings.
I've heard that you're a tough son of a bitch, and you're bright and connected. I'd like to hire you to represent me."
As I said, Cooley had not passed the bar just yet.
I'm not a lawyer.
I don't know if that's legal. But amazing. Yep. First client booked.
It was his first client. He assured Count Dante, as long as he passed the bar, he'd be more than happy to represent the Count in his upcoming trial.
Absolutely no notes. Perfect plan.
You know, there's plenty of other lawyers that have degrees.
I don't like that. They cost things like money. And they have things like offices. And I don't trust that. I like a man who doesn't have a home to live in.
I want a lawyer who is a warrior. And you, as a cop, are a warrior. A police officer, please come to my side.
Bring your gun to court.
Live from your grave.
Now, when Dante's trial convened 8 months later, he was incredibly lucky to draw an old Irish judge who saw this entire affair as a massive waste of both his time and the court's time, even if one guy was dead and another was partially blind.
He just doesn't give a fucking shit. He's so stupid. He's still like, yeah, that guy deserved, I guess, fuck him.
Fucking Chicago in the 70s. It's like, ah, you know, sometimes people gonna die.
Well, it was a dojo war. I'm actually kind of surprised it was only one guy. So, go work, guys. Well, Cooley, good, safe dojo war.
It was under the fair fight law.
Well, Cooley said that when Dante's hearings paused for breaks, he could hear the judge muttering under his breath, quote,
"They're all crazy. They're all crazy."
This was fantastic news to Cooley, because Cooley's whole strategy had been like, this is a crazy brawl gone wrong. There's nothing, like, Dante doesn't have any culpability here.
They do tend to mix aggressively with other men. Yeah. This is just men sharing information through kicks and punches with each other.
This is just an old-fashioned situation we like to call having a go.
That's all.
In fact, no records exist of Count Dante's court case at all, because the angry Irish judge suddenly dismissed all the charges in a flurry of exasperation. Reportedly, he said, quote,
"They're all guilty. All these people are a bunch of lunatics who deserve what they got. Now get out of my courtroom."
And with that, he banged the gavel, and Count Dante was set loose upon the world once again.
Count Dante 1, Chicago 0. I did it again. Count Dante does it again.
I just imagine this judge. And like, for me, in my head, I see just a George C. Scott, like, "They're all guilty. Get them out. Bunch of fucking lunatics. Get them out of the room. Deserve what they got. Get them out of the court, goddamn courtroom.
Release them. They're all violent."
And that's actually a wonderful lesson within the Dante system. Remember, a W is a W. Yeah.
Now, Count Dante's trial came to a close in 1971, but he'd already been unofficially kicked out of the martial arts community for initiating the dojo war.
Sure.
All of his students had left because Dante had led Konchevich to his death for reasons Dante still couldn't quite explain.
There's a lot of systemic issues, and it's a lot of contextual issues.
I hate green!
That's one of the issues.
And the entire affair had turned the Count from a local character to a local joke. But instead of recalibrating, Count Dante doubled down on being Count Dante by turning Count Dante into a full-time job. He focused most of his energies on his mail-order business, which is, of course, fueled by the ads he continued placing in national comic books. But since Count Dante was blackballed from the martial arts world, he began getting out his violent urges by courting conflict in the streets. Dressed as ridiculously as possible to attract bad attention, Dante would cruise around in his gigantic chocolate brown Cadillac Eldorado, just waiting for somebody to say something.
You thinking I'm gay? You thinking I'm gay?
Yeah.
Good. That's great to hear.
I guess.
Yeah.
You're gay.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I might punch you in the face.
Ow! You said it first!
Yeah, isn't that funny? Isn't that funny? It's a funny little joke I played.
I mean, it's more of a pimp situation.
Oh,
a gigantic chocolate brown Cadillac Eldorado, leotard, cape, cane.
Yeah. What's going on, motherfuckers? Hey, how you guys doing? What's hanging? You got some mess on your danglo? Yeah, there we go. Nothing shaking but the leaves on the trees, but they wouldn't be shaking if it wasn't for the breeze. What's going on, my player, please?
It is young bully mentality.
Yeah.
Because when I was a young bully, my parents were like, you can get into fights as long as you don't start them. You can't throw the first punch.
That's awesome.
You know, and so it's like, his brain was, as long as I don't physically throw the first punch, this is allowed.
Yeah. Well, according to his lawyer, Bob Cooley, once Count Dante successfully provoked someone, a darkness would settle on the count.
Black dragon, he's in the night. Black dragon, ready for a fight.
Dante, you paying attention?
Yes. Sorry, I was just whispering.
Well, Dante would get quiet and focused, as if he was in a trance. And finally, his eyes would bulge out of his head, and the count's power would explode. And more often than not, regardless of how big of a douchebag he was, he would leave a pile of unconscious bodies in his wake.
I punched with all of my limbs at once!
Since Count Dante was no longer having to uphold any artifice of tradition or decorum, he gave in fully to his dark side and began participating in serious criminal activities.
It's time to get truly serious about cocaine. Honestly, yep. Up to this point, I've been silly and really not been kind of, but now it's about to be in. I'm getting locked in. I'm really to focus on cocaine.
Yeah. In the early 1970s, Dante and his bullfighting student, Arthur Rapkin, joined a legion of shady men by getting into the business of smuggling cocaine. Rapkin would fly down to Colombia, buy cocaine by the kilo.
Thank you.
Then smuggle it home in a suitcase through Miami.
God, so nervous the whole time.
Yeah, well, this was actually a relatively easy thing to do back then. This is before drug sniffing dogs. We didn't even have a TSA back then. As long as you could bluff your way through it and they didn't look in your suitcase, you could get kilos of cocaine.
So your passport here says you've been to Colombia 4 times this month?
Yes, I did go. I love pupusas.
Well, Rapkin, he started living the high life. He got married. He even had Dante act as the best man at his wedding.
Dante, I gotta say, you're the best thing that's ever happened to me.
I will have to say that's the first time anyone's ever said that to me.
Was Rapkin in the dojo war?
No, he was not. No. He. I guess he was busy that night. It all came together very fast.
Yeah.
Soon after Rapkin's wedding, he discovered that both the FBI and the DEA were investigating him for drug smuggling.
It sounds like it's going to be.
To the point where they were already tapping his phones.
We're kind of in the cocaine business. It kind of comes a part of it. I figured that you knew that.
Now, both Rapkin and Dante knew that Rapkin's phones were being tapped, but Dante was getting incredibly high on his own supply. So he'd call Rapkin on the phone, coked out of his mind, wanting to talk specifically about cocaine and cocaine smuggling at great length.
So how much cocaine you want me to bring to your house tonight? Honestly, I just want to know because, I'll use code China White. How much of that
better
China
code,
White?
Better code. Need a better code.
Okay, how about cocaine? How much cocaine do you want me to bring?
Make it quick.
A handful? Do you want this much? Do you want a handful? Or do you want a basketful?
I'm going to hang up.
It's real loose. It's just in my car. I actually put it in the ashtray.
All right, just get over here before you ruin all of it.
It's actually kind of mixed in with a bunch of soot.
Well, Rapkin was, to say the least, highly annoyed by Dante's reckless behavior.
This is my style.
And Dante got so out of pocket between the cocaine abuse, the street brawls, and the loose lips that Rapkin eventually just stopped taking Dante's calls.
Wow.
Yeah. He screened his calls just to avoid Dante.
Yeah.
They are. Now, by 1972, Count Dante was longing to get back into the world of martial arts. And since some of his students had successfully formed their own martial arts scene in Fall River, Massachusetts, hometown of Lizzie Borden, the Count relocated and reopened the Black Dragon Fighting Society.
Oh, yeah. He's just like, you know, if Chicago couldn't handle me, you know who loved me? New England. Oh, there, that's exactly the vibe.
There in Fall River, Dante really did try to re-enter the scene. He even went so far as to take out ads in Variety offering himself for acting roles after the death of Bruce Lee, because Dante hoped that he could fill the hole left by the greatest martial arts movie star of all time with his white Blackula routine.
It's lickety split. I get right in there. I have the charisma of Humphrey Bogart. I have the body of Annette Bening. I'm ready to perform.
But Count Dante seemingly couldn't keep his nose clean.
And
that
literally.
That went both for participating in criminal activities and doing copious amounts of cocaine. Dante, therefore, supposedly hooked up with a mobster named Luigi DeFonso sometime in 1973 or 1974.
Told him I thought his name was a bit of a hate crime.
This is when the story gets a little murky. There's a lot of hearsay. Now, Luigi DeFonso was a young con man and gangster who'd made his first million at the age of 21 in the late 1960s through a bogus investment scheme. His taste for the high life eventually led people to refer to DeFonso as the Sicilian Gatsby.
Welcome to my mansion. Please enjoy the champagne flute of marinara. Please enjoy all the Charlestons you can do here in my Sicilian home. What is that, Lee?
When DeFonso met Dante, DeFonso had also fled Chicago to Fall River. But DeFonso had fled because he'd been accused of swindling some 2,000 investors in a commodities trading scam. DeFonso's relocation, however, is what links Count Dante to one of the largest heists in American history, the Perlator Heist of 1974.
Oh, the story isn't done.
No. There's still one more. Like there's, you know, the end of Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
We're there.
Yeah. One last step. He's trying to make it happen, but it's just so funny in the little town of Fall River, Massachusetts. Like these two fucking ridiculous characters just walking around all the cobbled streets and shit, just being like, can't even believe how much chowder these animals eat. Disgusting. As he, like, throats a bratwurst.
So one day in the fall of 1974, Count Dante showed up to the office of his lawyer, Bob Cooley, who had, of course, previously represented the Count during the trial that followed the so-called Dojo War.
Great news, Count! I'm a lawyer now!
Dante, however, was gacked out on coke, utterly bloated, and completely disheveled. Dante was even conspicuously missing the trademark cape and leotard. But after some small talk, Dante asked Bob if he wanted in on a scheme that was sure to, quote, win Cooley $1 million. By this point, though, Cooley didn't want anything to do with further Dante shenanigans, because this was not the first time that Dante had offered Cooley, a former cop, by the way, action on something that was highly illegal. Such Cooley luckily missed out on what could have been the early planning stages of the Perlator heist. Now, as far as what the Perlator heist was, around the time that Dante was offering a cut to Cooley, the Illinois Bureau of Investigation got a tip that a big score was being planned by the so-called Chicago Outfit. That was the Bureau's name for Chicago's most active Italian mafia crime family. So the Bureau put tails on such organized crime figures as Pete Gucci, Jimmy the Bomber Catawara, and who else but Count Dante's new neighbor in Fall River, Luigi DeFonso. The Bureau saw these three men meet in a hotel room for about 2 hours in September of 1974, but it was not noted if Count Dante was amongst their group.
I was running security outside.
Hey, can we get this fucking guy out of here?
Yeah, sure. I'll go get coffees.
Get the fuck out of here!
You're welcome.
But while the Bureau had no idea what the Chicago outfit's new target was, a heist went down in Chicago about a month later at a warehouse belonging to one of the biggest armored car companies in America, Purolator Security Incorporated. At around 1 a.m. on Monday, October 21st, $3.8 million in small unmarked bills, plus $500,000 in checks. And that's $3.8 million in 1974 money.
Yeah.
All that was stolen from Purolator's Chicago warehouse. But while the heist was well planned, it did not go off without a hitch.
Let me tell you, not a single person believed I was African American.
One of the worst ideas in the planning. I do admit it was mine.
The moment I get in there, I take the security guard's eye, right?
Hey, please sit!
And I should announce that Count Dante has arrived.
You should listen. I will go in. I will say, Count Dante has arrived. Are you waiting to get the terror of Bang Zhang? You guys know what I do best.
The authorities were tipped off to the break-in when warehouse staff noticed that a smoke detector had gone off in one of the Purolator vaults. But this was all a part of the plan. When firefighters arrived, they discovered that three plastic money bags had been filled with gasoline and lit with a long fuse. The fire was meant as a distraction while the perps got away with the cash. Everyone's focused on the fire, no one's chasing the guys. And that plan did work, but the fire was not as large as it was supposed to be. The perps had meant for 11 bags of fire to go off, but 8 bags filled with gas didn't catch because there wasn't enough oxygen in the vaults to keep the fire going. I think, though, what the bit, all of the
bags of gasoline.
That's
the dumbest shit I've ever heard.
Well, I mean, it worked partly. I think it was also supposed to obscure, like, how someone found out about the Purolator heist because there were no signs of forced entry to the vault. The vault was protected by concrete walls a foot thick on each side. This, of course, heavily implied that the heist was some sort of inside job, which gave the cops a solid lead. And while it did take authorities a little while to pick up the trail, they did make 6 arrests in connection to the heist. 2 of those 6 men arrested had connections to Count Dante, even if those connections were tenuous at best.
I told you to kill yourself. You're supposed to take a suicide pill. You're supposed to kill yourself as soon as you get their hands. I can't be taken.
So just a few days after the heist, Count Dante's lawyer, Bob Cooley, had received a visit from one of the heist planners, the aforementioned Pete Gucci.
Well, so this is the Pete Gucci. Here's the mother Pete Gucci. I just want to say the please protect the man because I don't like to be a part of this. My Gucci family does not want me to be a part of this.
Do you think his body bag was called the Gucci bag?
Well, perhaps not so coincidentally, Pete Gucci's lawyer shared an office space with Bob Cooley. And Gucci had dropped by Bob Cooley's office one day to hide $25,000 in cash behind Cooley's sofa because Gucci knew he was facing arrest.
Hey, don't look behind your sofa now. That's my money.
In fact, what I'm going to do is I'm going to piss over here. It's Gucci's now.
Nah, I like a Gucci. I'm like a money Gucci's now.
Gucci had also left instructions with his attorney that when he was arrested, he was supposed to go to Cooley's office, retrieve the $25,000 in cash hidden behind the sofa, and use it to bail Gucci out of jail.
Because normally we kind of depend on my ability to turn into an Italian mush that allows me to move between bars.
And while that connection to Count Dante was indeed circumstantial, Dante was absolutely questioned by the FBI in regards to the heist as a possible suspect.
Always question the guy in the cape.
We ditched the cape.
Well, you know.
Dante even passed a lie detector test, but some believe that Count Dante was able to use his martial arts training and his meditation skills to cheat the detector by controlling his vital signs.
Are you ever lying if you never tell the truth?
Good question. That's why lie detectors are not reliable.
I just got to say, according to this machine, Count Dante is dead.
Yes, I've been training for this since I was a child.
Look, as you can see, I can make myself frozen to the touch.
And so, Count Dante was never charged as being a part of the Pearlator heist.
Wow!
But there are other factors that imply Count Dante may have been involved. First of all, out of all the people arrested, the only man who went free was Dante's neighbor in Fall River, Luigi D'Afonso. While the other five guys went to prison, D'Afonso was found not guilty of all charges relating to the heist. D'Afonso was one of those mob guys that just couldn't make a fucking conviction stick to him.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. Second, on the very next night after the heist, Dante supposedly called Arthur Rapkin and spilled all the details of the Pearlator job to his bullfighting, coke-selling former student over the phone again.
I'm doing the coolest thing tomorrow. I have to tell you, I know you'll be super excited about it. Do you remember how excited you were about the bull?
You're going to be so mad that you fired me from dealing your cocaine.
By the way, is the DEA still tapping your phones? DEA, hey, hello!
Hey, tell me, how much cocaine do you have on you personally?
Dante painted himself as the mastermind who introduced all the parties involved and told everyone what to do. From what Dante claimed, one of his students knew somebody who knew somebody on the inside at Pearlator. And that student went to Dante with this information, quote, because of his reputation. Mm. But the biggest factor that points towards someone getting away with their part in the heist, maybe Count Dante, maybe not, was the fact that over $1 million in cash was never recovered by the authorities. And that money remains missing to this day.
It's literally missing. I lost it. I can't find the money. It's gone. I think we might have set it on fire. I don't quite know. I also just like this idea. You know, he was just like, he like opened a door for somebody.
Yeah.
You know, that's all Count Dante like did.
If he was involved in it at all.
If he just knew a guy that knew that it was happening, and then he could always be like, you know that percolator thing? All me.
Yeah. All Dante.
Yeah, I still live in my studio apartment. Yes, I still drive the chocolate Eldorado that can barely move. That's fine. Yeah, absolutely. But I'm in the money.
I won't spend that $1 million. It's my friend.
It's invested. It's invested. It's in a pile in my apartment.
Now, even though Count Dante may have successfully pulled off one of the largest heists in American history, a darkness brought on by the cocaine and his own penchant for violence was quickly settling over the deadliest man alive. In the March of 1975, Dante acted as guest host and probable silent partner for an event held at the Roseland Ballroom in Taunton, Massachusetts. This event was billed as the Taunton Death Matches, which nicely reflected just how grim things had gotten for the Count. See, the rules for the Taunton Death Matches allowed anyone to enter off the street and sign up for a spot in a no-holds-barred bare-knuckle brawl. Thumbs in the eyes, groin kicks, testicle crushing, anything and everything was allowed, and most of the contestants were just violent Massachusetts shitheads with no training whatsoever.
It sounds like fun, but I bet each fight was like 3 seconds long.
Oh, yeah.
Or it's just like dudes rolling around on the ground, and eventually one just went, ow!
Yeah, but bare knuckle boxing is extremely dangerous.
Yeah, it's either 3 seconds or 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And just,
God. Yeah, where they're and afraid just, to hit each other. I've seen those where they don't even like do it. Well, I'll watch a street fight with the bare knuckle box, but they kind of like hover and they go like, because they don't really want to do it. And then the rest of them are just, they're pretty brutal.
Or it's like, you know, that incredible scene in Deadwood when Dan beats he fights Hearst Man.
Probably
the best fight scene ever filmed.
One of my favorites ever.
It is honestly my favorite fight scene. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
The captain, I think, is
the captain.
Is?
Yeah. And some of them are like that. They're fucking make you want to throw up.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Now, even though this event was a fucking mess, to say the least, Black Belt magazine still came out for what would be their last interview with Count Dante. During the interview, Dante had a couple of his new students demonstrate the street fighting skills he'd been teaching them in an attempt to impress the karate journalist. One student sat in a bar stool playing the victim, while another of Dante's students grabbed the seated student by the shoulders before violently kicking the bar stool out from underneath. Another student just punched one of Dante's guys in the balls as a demonstration of the techniques that Dante was teaching.
Very effective. That punch went right to the balls. Right? It's kind of graceful. Didn't even wait.
But near the end of the interview, Count Dante became agitated when the karate journalist steered the conversation towards Dante's possible criminality.
You don't understand. There's contextual, systematic context stuff.
A lot of ins, a lot of outs.
A lot of outs.
Dante said he was afraid of getting arrested in relation to the Pearlator heist, and he even speculated that someone in the Chicago outfit might kill him because of what he knew. As such, Dante claimed that he locked himself in his condo every night, sitting there, staring at the door with a shotgun in his lap. But luckily for Dante, neither the cops nor the mob read Black Belt magazine, so he suffered no consequences for running his mouth once again.
I'm just keeping my shotgun. Just keeping it company.
But interestingly, here's what the journalist wrote to end his final story on Count Dante. The journalist wrote that his work, quote, brings him into contact with many who have killed, and such men give off a certain vibration. Dante had it, but whether he had acquired it in mortal combat or through expert mimicry, we may never know.
At least they said my mimicry was expert. That's not even bad. Honestly, I'll take that. It's a backhanded compliment, but I will take that, yes.
And then we did get one Mortal Kombat in there.
We did!
People have been using
Mortal
it.
Mortal Kombat!
Oh, yeah.
Toasty. Now, while Count Dante's claims about the Mafia's attempts on his life sound extremely overblown,
yes,
there's one more story that implies that there may have been some truth to Count Dante's tale.
I think if he made somebody Italian mad, that would make a lot of sense.
Yes.
Hold on, Count Dante had a tale?
I know.
See, about 6 months after the Pearlator heist,
Dragon Lord,
lawyer Bob Cooley got a call from Count Dante inviting him to come over to his condo in Chicago, because I suppose by 1975, Count Dante had returned to his hometown. Now, Cooley had been avoiding Count Dante for months, and he wasn't the only one in Count Dante's life who had written off the deadliest man alive. Most of the people who'd known Dante during his heyday in the 60s were done putting up with the coke rages and the grandiosity by the 1970s. Now, grandiosity, it's great for comic book ads, fucking exhausting in real life.
Mm-hmm. What's going on, bro? Yeah, that's right. Dante's back in town. What's going on? You guys, you're busy? Yeah, it sounds like you're busy, yeah. Well, you want to go catch some kicks or something? You want to go out later? Maybe do some sparring? You're busy. That's fine.
How about a fight? Would you like to fight?
What if we just straight up fight each other? What if I kick you in the balls a couple of times? You want to come over and kick me in the balls?
You wouldn't believe in Massachusetts how much guys love getting kicked in the balls.
You're not into, do you have any cocaine?
But for some reason, on that night, Bob Cooley decided to accept Dante's invitation. When he arrived at Dante's condo, he found that Dante was even more disheveled, coked out, and bloated than he'd ever been. He's in a bad way.
What's going on? Bobby, it's good to see you, buddy. What's going on, buddy? You want a cigarette? You have one?
Cooley, however, felt like Dante had called him over to brag, or to prove something to Cooley specifically. See, at one point, Dante pulled Cooley into a bedroom in his condo and told him, quote,
"You always thought I was a fuck-off. Look at this."
And at that moment, Dante revealed a cardboard box full of $100 bills.
Is that a fuck-off? Is that a fuck-off box? That's some fuck-off box, money?
Who says that?
What a fuck-off does?
Yeah, well, that guy, he's such a fuck-off.
You think I'm the fuck-off?
Quite possibly could have been the missing $1 million from the Pearlator heist. But this goes against what we already know about the heist. If you'll remember, the Pearlator heist, it was specifically a good heist because it involved small bills. So unless Dante took his ill-gotten gains to the bank and exchanged the small bills that he stole in the heist for larger ones, this was likely just a box of money.
You could call it a box of money, or you might just say it's a box of papers. That sort of looked like money. Because why would I not be spending this?
Yeah. Right? Well, I mean, he has a condo in Chicago. That's pretty good.
You know, wow. Yep, you're right.
Yeah. Probably rob someone else.
Well, you're correct.
Well, as far as where he got the money, that question might have been answered that very night. See, Cooley did eventually escape the increasingly uncomfortable hangout, but hours later, Count Dante called Cooley's house. Cooley, of course, didn't answer. It was the middle of the fucking night. So Dante left an almost panicked message on Cooley's answering machine. He said, quote,
"Bub, I mean, you've got to believe me. What I showed you wasn't real money. It's all counterfeit. You've got to believe me.
That's going to get you off.
Yeah.
Listen here, buddy. I'm in a lot of trouble. I've lied to a lot of people, right? Yeah. I said a lot of different things. And you got to come over here and tell this guy this money's counterfeit.
It's all counterfeit. It's all counterfeit.
It's counterfeit. It's all been fake. Yeah, yeah.
I've committed a crime, Bob.
You know I don't have that money, Bob.
Hold on. Are you taping this?
The answering machine.
It is an answering machine. This is on a tape.
Well, just tell Deborah hello for me. Hey, it's me, Dante. I miss you guys, and I'll hopefully see you soon.
Well,
Whether it's an extreme coincidence or a part of some grander conspiracy, the deadliest man alive may have had reason to be panicked that night, because within hours of making that last phone call to Bob Cooley, Count Juan Rafael Dante was dead. According to Bob, Count Dante's living girlfriend at the time called him the next morning and said that the Count had been killed and that it was her belief that someone had poisoned him. Now, I can see why she thought that, because if you'll remember from the last episode, Count Dante had a persistent bleeding stomach ulcer from, quote, dealing with all the politics of the martial arts world.
I'm just sick of all the subtle nuances. I'm sick of all the talking and philosophizing.
All the high-ing and the yah-ing.
And the endless belts!
Honestly, and I might just say, I might have something to do with just how many times I've been kicked in the balls. I honestly think that the doctors might need to look at me for science for how many times a man can be kicked in the balls and still have a penis.
Are you making fun of my outfit?
Well, that persistent bleeding stomach ulcer, that was listed as his cause of death.
Yeah.
And as anyone who's seen a medical procedural knows, dying from internal hemorrhaging caused by a stomach ulcer is usually accompanied by the patient projectile vomiting blood. So, I can see why the Count's girlfriend assumed poisoning.
Do you have any cups so we can maybe get some of this blood back inside of me? Because I'm pretty certain a lot of this blood that is on the outside of me is super crucial to the underside. What the fuck? What the fuck? How am I turning inside? It's politics. It's all too much politics. It's what's killing me.
Put that metal rod inside of me. We need to cauterize my lungs.
We need to cauterize my lungs. There's a problem. There's a leak. There's a mole. There's a mole in my lungs.
But interestingly, when the police came and took the body away, the entire box of cash was missing from the closet, and Bob Cooley is adamant that Dante's girlfriend did not take the money, nor did she hide it. As such, there is still over $1 million missing from the Pearlator heist of 1974. And while there's obviously more to the story here, any secrets that may have painted a fuller picture were lost with Count Juan Rafael Dante, the now former deadliest man alive.
The deadest man alive.
The deadliest man dead.
The deadliest dead man.
So the cocaine didn't help the stomach ulcer?
Probably not. I'm sure it didn't. I'm sure it did not. The extreme bloating caused by the cocaine probably didn't help the persistent bleeding stomach ulcer. He was probably coughing up blood and vomiting blood for quite a while.
Yes, prior, I thought it was just demonstrating how tough my intestines were, that they were beating up my other intestines. That's all I can assume.
I can only imagine. He is one of the, like, even the, he was a piece of shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the world is probably a better place without him in it. But man, how Count Dante have handled the 90s?
Oh,
like,
wow.
How would he have handled the 80s?
You know, he would have gotten the skateboarding.
Hey, listen. Be careful. You're about to hear a thing on the news about HIV, okay? Listen, it came down to the fact that, yes, I had sex with a monkey. It's a long story. It's a long goddamn story. It's a story. I didn't know. I thought it was a man in a costume. It's a long story.
Well, I hope that chick got that money.
Oh, dude, I hope so too. That the Brahmin bull. I just see the bull in a car driving across the country with the box of money next to him, just blowing out the fucking window, you know, like,
I wonder where that money is.
But honestly, thanks to the weirdos of America.
Yeah, and thanks to my my man at my local coffee shop who turned me on to the Count Dante tale. I'd never heard of this before.
Not at all.
He told me about it. Like, that's an episode. Dojo, he's like, have you ever heard of the Dojo War? I'm like, I have not. Please tell me more.
Yes, we love to hear your stupid stories.
Yeah.
Yeah, these are amazing. So go next week. We're coming back with a bit of aliens. All right, and then we got some other stuff coming on. You're going to see. We're coming in the pipe. Very, very interesting. And are you ready for announcement? It is live. Our Halloween vinyl album. Go and check out Fright Jansen's Revolting Repository of Ghastly Sounds, Volume 1 and 2 at newberrycomics.com/products/last-podcast-on-the-left. It's on the newberrycomics.com website.
I think you could probably just Google Last Podcast on the Left Sound Effects Album. It'll come up.
And all the Instagrams can be live on our Instagrams. It's going to be live on the website. It's going to go live on Friday, May 8th at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So don't worry if it still says page 404 not found. down right now. It is coming out, but we want to say thank you for those of you that you're going to really like what we've done here. It is thick. It is, as we do here, way over the top.
Yeah, it's very
genuinely
cool.
Frightening. And there is a dance hit as composed. I'm going to put this out the butt right now, just so you know, because it's already out. We have a dance hit original piece written by Marcus, myself, Isaac Hansen, and Ash Gordon for our new band, Mass for Trash.
Yeah. Yeah. I do vocals.
Yeah, it's
I
awesome.
Scream.
That's great.
Yeah, it's really fun.
It's real fun. Yeah, it's just a fun song.
The album was so much fun to make. Most of the people on the network were in it. We had so many great, like, special guests pop in. It's fucking so much fun. It's vinyl, right? And it's the only way you can listen to it.
Yeah,
and
the vinyl,
right,
it's
for
a
now.
Timely,
yeah.
It's vinyl. It's a sound effects album that is not going to be available on streaming yet. It is entirely on the album.
How big is the first pressing?
Right?
1,000?
The first one's 1,000, and we want to kick it in the more.
So that's going to go.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And we are in collaboration with Newbery Comics, David Dustmalchian, Soundcrafters here in Los Angeles, and with original music by Ash Gordon and Isaac Hansen, and featuring everybody here. And there's also a bunch of special guests on the album. Can't wait for you to hear it.
It's a lot of fun.
It's going to fuck you up.
It's actually scary.
No, there's some pretty disturbing parts on it. It's really fun to do.
Hell yeah.
Julie's great in it.
Yeah. My wife gets... Well, you'll see.
You'll see. Go to patreon.com/lastpodcast and left to give us money in order to get our shows ad-free. You also can see Last Stream on the Left live every Tuesday, 5 p.m. PST. You can also go and see all of our socials at LP on the Left for all the fucking shits on Instagram, TikTok, whatever. And you also, on YouTube, go check out LPN Romanticy, Who's the Bee, The Foreign Report, No Dogs in Space is currently coming back.
Yeah.
Where you're working there, it's in the pipe. And on LPN TV, the most important thing that you can go look at, HDX2, Season 2 is now live. It is on our YouTube page, LPN TV, and also we have a brand new YouTube, The Brighter Side.
That's right, The Brighter Side LPN. So go to youtube.com/@TheBrighterSideLPN to go follow The Brighter Side. We're building that up. It's going to be a new way to watch The Brighter Side, same old show. But for now, you can see us, which is nice.
It is nice.
And also, HGX2 is fucking so much fun. It comes out every Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific. It's 8 episodes long, and we're up to 4 right now. 5 if you're listening to this at a normal pace. But yeah, no, it's so much fun. Marcus fucking crushes it. Henry crushes it. It's a blast. I really can't. It's honestly, it's a return to Murderfist as far as I'm concerned.
It is.
Oh, yeah. It was fun. I felt like I finally got to be in a Murderfist sketch. It was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, which episode am I in?
You are in episode 4, I believe.
Nice.
Yes.
All right.
So that wasn't the one that comes out today.
Yeah.
Yeah, hell yeah. No, it's come come see my judge.
Come see me, judge.
Yes.
All right. Well, we'll see you next week. Hail Satan.
Hugging.
You know, fuck him. I hate him. God damn it. Hail Count Dante.
Wow.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. In the very end, he comes all the way back around.
He really is a piece of shit, and I'm glad he's dead, but...
Yeah, right?
But it's the idea of Count Dante.
The idea of
like, I know, yes, he's...
Him in theory is amazing.
He did some really awful shit, yes, but just take a look at one of the comic book ads, and you're like, wow, that's America.
That's a real bad guy.
It is.
Yeah. And we deserve it.
We do.